This is Joanne Ray with Senior Marketing Specialist, and I am super excited today to have a special edition of this podcast called The Human Connection. So the whole goal behind the idea of this podcast was for me to be able to bring conversations that I've lucky enough, fortunate enough to have met some really phenomenal, successful, interesting, dynamic, wonderful people in this industry throughout my career. And so the idea behind this was to kind of, you know, be able to sit down and have a conversation with those people that I get to do on a regular basis anyway, but to share that with you and for it not to be about, you know, business practices 101 and here's the 10 things that I did to be a better leader. We can go through those, but to me, the most interesting part of somebody who I find interesting, you know, successful, dynamic, phenomenal, whatever adjective you want to use, is what got them there. What, tell me a little bit about you. Let's peel back some of the layers. Let's look at some of the challenges that you've had. Let's look at some of the roadblocks. What was your North Star? How did you continue to on your path of whatever success you have in life? How did you get there? So to me, those are the most interesting conversations. So today I'm super excited to be able to bring a little bit different guest here today. So to find phenomenal, extraordinary leaders is not very hard for me. In fact, today I walked down the hall and found a couple. So today we are joined by two of my teammates, Rachel Merrimeyer and Will Pierce. And the format for today is going to be a little different as well, in that Rachel had an idea, which we've done many times over the course of our careers, but to have a book club, a book study, to take different books that have meant something different to whomever. And let's throw that out. And anybody that wants to join, completely voluntary. But the three of us today are going to be wrapping up a book that Rachel chose, I guess, just a couple months ago, which is Brené Brown, Dare to Lead, which I've been a huge Brené Brown fan for many years. First saw her TED Talk was kind of where I had first even heard about the word vulnerability associated with business and associated with leadership and associated with growth. It's just not the normal word, I don't think, that you would normally associate with, you know, success and excel and drive and all those different things that we're all kind of taught how to get to the top of whatever we're getting to. So today I'm going to turn it over to you, Rachel. This was your, you've been the driving force behind this. You chose the book. You put Will and I on your team, and we've had a great time. In fact, the whole reason I wanted to share this with people is it's been such great conversation throughout studying this book of just literally, again, those two words, human connection. And I think, you know, we'll each give a summary here in a minute, but I think that's, to me, they just collided. Those two worlds collided so well. So I wanted to share the fun that I've been able to have with you too. So Rachel, I'll kind of let you drive, you know, summarizing the book, and then we can get into some bigger conversations with Will as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So books obviously have been a huge passion for me. I have the library app Libby, and if I'm not, you know, doing something, if I'm doing something like cooking or driving or whatever, I've always got a book on tape. Or, you know, if it's 2 o'clock in the morning and I can't sleep, I'm picking it up and reading. And so I had previously read the Dare to Lead book, and it was just so good. And it spoke to me so much that I wanted to share this with other people. So that's how I ended up picking this particular book. It's just one of those that, like you said, Joanne, it's so different. Vulnerability is one of the main themes, and she uses the word rumble a lot. Rumble with vulnerability. And it's a different perspective and a different mindset of leadership. And I wanted to make sure that we had the opportunity to anyone in our company to join a book club and go over this topic could. So yeah, Dare to Lead by Brené Brown was the book that we went over, and we just finished it all up. So you all are getting the pleasure of listening in our final book club conversation. So to overall like wrap it up, I wanted everyone to come with, what is the overall theme? How did you feel about it? And some different topics or sections that really spoke to you. For me, the overall theme was that leaders who choose to step into the uncomfortable and rumble, I'm using that word again, with vulnerability are good leaders. And she uses the word over and over, but being clear is kind. Mm-hmm. And I thought that is a very interesting concept, because you can easily, like, in the background, like, be annoyed with someone or frustrated, but being clear with your expectations, what, and she uses the word paint done. I really liked that word as well, because she went into the fact of, like, you know, your expectation and your thought of what an end project should look like could be different from another person. So using the terminology paint done was what she used in the book. And it was just a really neat concept and a way to explain it. But yeah, I mean, that was what I felt the overall theme was in the book. So how about you guys? Did you feel that too, or something different?
Go ahead, Will.
Yeah, absolutely. I think on the whole, that encompasses the theme and what Brené was trying to accomplish with the book. Some of the things that I really liked in it and that she covers a few times is, you know, as a manager, you have to be able to be vulnerable with your employees for them to be able to be vulnerable with you. You know, mm-hmm. It's something that, you know, we know who we are at work, what everybody's work lives are like, but you never really know what's going on with a lot of people outside of work. And if you can't ever tap into what's going on outside of work, you're never going to be able to really unlock them at work. And they're never going to be able to work to their full potential, because they've always got to kind of close that other portion of themselves off. And it's just not really a way to run, you know, a business. And it's not a healthy way to be an employee either, to have your work self and then your home self, and then be two completely separate entities.
Yeah, I think that probably summed it up for me too. I think I've studied psychology, I've studied communication. Those were my majors in college. And I also I'm kind of a life study of those two words. And I think she probably sums up those two words to me of the psychology behind why people do what they do and how to treat people. And then the word communication has been pretty big in my life. And I think that's some of the biggest stuff that I got out of this book was, you know, whether it's the rumble, like you said, or the one of my favorite quotes is, so tell me what we're trying to solve here. And I've said that once, I've said it 100 times, I bet, since I've read that. And I hope I had even before that, but it was just such a good reminder that when, you know, the analogy I've always given is when two people come down to a conversation and they're sitting across the kitchen table, desk, phone, email, whatever your communication source is, everybody comes with their own set of glasses on, right? You're coming into that conversation, that rumble, we'll talk more about that, but that conversation, that setting with what your expectations are of that conversation, your past, your expectations, your ideas, and the other person is coming with theirs. And until those two communicate, you're going to be, you know, just hitting brick walls, both of you, good or bad. So I love that phrase, and I've tried to incorporate that even more of, tell me what we're trying to solve here. What's our goal? Because again, coming into a conversation, a meeting, whether it's a good situation or it's a terrible problem we're trying to solve, sometimes we're not all trying to solve the same problem in a meeting or in a conversation, even with your spouse. You know, the example that she gave about the ham roll or the
ham fold. Mm-hmm.
The ham fold.
I laughed out loud reading that because I'm like, oh my God, that's so me. If anybody in my surroundings blows up or has a negative thought or comment, I immediately own it. Like, oh my God, what did I do? What's wrong? What can I do? How to fix it? I'm so sorry. Or you get the defensive mode of, now wait a minute, you can go buy your own dang turkey. And it wasn't even about that. It had nothing to do with that. But so those kinds of conversations to me are those kinds of realizations that when you step into a conversation with somebody, again, whether it's a lighthearted hallway talk or a meeting about something really serious or a true confrontation of we've got issues and we got to solve, that's kind of the first thing that's got to be running through your mind is, what are we all trying to solve here? What's our end goal? And how can we all help each other get there? Because too many times we're all trying to solve things that aren't meshing together and we're all going different directions.
You had a good point that just brought up something that I was thinking of. I told you all before about my hair straightener debacle that I had. I just had a really rough like month, I felt like, and my hair straightener just died and I sat down on the ground and started crying. And it's like the handful conversation that she had where, you know, it wasn't about that there wasn't any lunch meat in the fridge, or in my situation that my hair straightener had died. It was just the cherry on top of everything. And I think two main things, you know, my husband walked in and was like, what the heck's wrong with you? But instead of, you know, saying the problem wasn't the straightener, the salt, like that wasn't the problem. Yeah. The problem was everything else going on, but he had to sit down and I had to be willing to give and receive feedback and willing to have a conversation. And it took a little bit of time, but after we got to that point, there were two things. One, we asked the question, what problem are we actually trying to solve? But the other thing I didn't want was someone fixing a problem. I wanted empathy. And I know Brené Brown goes into empathy a lot in this book of, you know, as leaders, you need to get in there and basically be in the dark with that person. She says, we want to fix, we want to give advice, but empathy isn't about fixing. It's about the brave choice to be with someone in their darkest, not to race, to turn on the light so we feel better. Mm-hmm. And I loved that line because it literally touches on the fact that not everyone wants everything solved. Not everyone wants you to come in there and, you know, bring your knight in shining armor and kill all the bad guys. We want you to be in the dark with us. Right. And sometimes as a leader, that's the scary part, is sitting down and being in the dark with someone.
Right.
It really is. And it was a really cool aspect of the book was empathy.
Right. And I think our roles, and they change throughout our life, they change throughout the day, right? So what role you are playing here in this particular situation. But that's one I struggle with, because I struggle on both sides of being the vulnerable one and allowing myself to tell anybody, even those closest to me, I'm scared, I'm sad, I'm upset, this didn't work out the way that I thought it was going to, and I feel like it's my fault. To say those kinds of things is huge, number one. And then on the other side of it, to just allow to be in that moment, right? To be in the dark, to understand, because we're fixers. If you're even the type of person that wants to read leadership books, you want to fix things, right? That to you is, I want to get to the next whatever. I want to be a better human. I want to be a better employee. I want to be a better spouse. I want to be a better parent. Those are wonderful characteristics. But I think sometimes what comes along with that is we're also fixers. I see a problem over there, fix it. Meanwhile, I'm holding a baby, cooking dinner, on a conference call, typing an email. I can do it all, right? I'm a fixer. And sometimes people just want you to just be there. And that's, so both sides of that, I would say that's probably part two of my summary, if you will, of this whole book of what I've learned. But both sides of that is hard. And that's not something you normally read about in a leadership type book. Business book, human, you know, fulfillment book, of all these words of brave and scared and vulnerable. Those are not in a normal business book, but I love it. I think that's the whole secret here, is that once we accept those words and know what they are and know how to live those with our employees, with our spouse, with our neighbors, everything gets better.
You talked about, you know, the hesitancy to open up to people. Do you feel like that comes from that place of shame, like she was talking about, like not wanting to make the admittance of this is not going well, or we're not getting the outcome we desired out of it? Or where do you feel like that hesitancy has come from for you?
That's a great question, Will. And shame is such a big word. I don't know that I go there, and maybe it is, and I'm just not admitting it. I think it's just the people pleaser in me, you know, of never wanting to let those around me that depend on me for anything down. And I'm okay. Hopefully you've all heard me say 1,000 times, oh shoot, that didn't go well. in a funny, lighthearted, you know, okay, let's refocus and start over. But the big stuff is where I, you know, I kind of put that armor up of, and it's not shame. It's, I understand of 100 things, you know, 90 of them could not happen, you know, could not go work their way through. So it's not shame. It's all about, you know, I think that people pleasing, and I don't want to let anybody down. And
she actually goes into that too. I think she goes into a section where she ends up with a concussion. She ran into a door and she was supposed to be going on a book tour. And the end basically was her admitting that she did need to be graceful and take care of herself. And I think everyone else was trying to take care of her. Mm-hmm. And she wasn't taking care of herself. She felt like she was letting other people down by not doing what she needed to do. Yeah. And I think a lot of times, whether it's being a leader or being, you know, a spouse or a friend or a sibling or a whatever, a parent, anything, where it's hard to be kind to yourself sometimes. It's hard to let yourself take a break and say, you know, say no in general, because that's important. And she actually goes into a whole section about, you know, making sure that you're modeling behavior you want to see in the people that you're surrounding. And one of them is not idolizing and promoting overworking and overstressing. It's giving yourself a break, because that's where you really dive into who you are, what you want to be. You get creative and you recharge. You're not getting burnt out. And I think in America in general, we have that culture of work, 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 and not take breaks. And we idolize overworking. And yep. I think as a leader in America, I think that's even harder to give yourself a break and say no and give yourself that time to recharge your battery and not idolize working 24/7. It's definitely a thing that spoke to me when I was reading through that, because I'm like that too. I got through life not because I feel like I'm smarter than everyone else or better than everyone else. It's because I work really, really hard. Mm-hmm. And to step back and say, okay, and talk to myself kind, like when you look in a mirror, that she even mentioned that, like, would you talk to yourself the same way that you talk to other people? Oh. And a lot of people don't. You look in the mirror and you have that, like what Will said, guilt versus shame. When you're little, it's guilt. You're like, oh no, I broke the vase. But when you're older, you're like, oh, I shouldn't have broken the vase. You know, I'm so stupid. And like, you know, you go into that shaming yourself for doing that. And it maybe was just an accident. So really getting in touch with that feeling of I need a break or I need to take time, I think is definitely an interesting concept.
Yeah. And you hit on it a little bit when you talked about like finding who you are. So many people, and this has been something that I myself have struggled with as well. You get wrapped up and your identity is your work. Mm-hmm. You center yourself around how well am I doing at my job? You know, where can I take this? What do people think about like my title and the work that I do? Is that starts to encompass your entire being. And then it leads to people being burnt out, work performance getting worse, and just overall general unhappiness, because you're not taking that step back and thinking, who am I outside of work? What do I like to do in my free time and in my spare time? And it's something that I think not only management at a lot of places struggle with, but people trying to get to that next step. They think that they have to always do 5 million extra things to prove that they are good enough to take that next step in the company. And then they just focus everything around doing so.
Mm-hmm. Joanne, you said something earlier in the book club that I wrote down on my book and I loved it, but you said there's a difference between a to-do list and a to-be list.
Mm. Yeah.
And that really spoke to me. And that kind of goes with what Will just talked about.
Yeah, I think, and I can't take credit for that. I heard that on another podcast, but I think that was something that I've always tried to intertwine too. A to-do list is, those are tasks, right? I've got to get up. I've got to do these things in order to get to the next part of my day, or to move things, or you need something. You two need something from me. So I need to write that down, get that done first so that you guys can go on and do and all the different things on your list. But I think somewhere we get so caught up in that, again, to your point, Rachel, as humans, as Americans, as as competitive people, you know, people in business, whatever title you want to give us, that we sometimes forget those are just tasks. And what are we trying to be, right? What do we want to, it goes back to, again, what are we trying to solve here? You can kind of use that. You can kind of back that up and look at your whole life, your whole career, your whole family. What are we trying to be? We've all got the to-do list, but what do we all want to be? Do you want to be? So I literally started writing those. I want to be a better listener. I want to be a better communicator. I want to be a better spouse. We've all joked before that, in my case anyway, you know, Mark gets what's left of me at the end of the day. And that's not fair. He's mm-hmm. the most important person that I need to share my day with. And he gets what's left at the end of the day. And like you said, looking in a mirror, would you speak that way to others? Sometimes he gets the brunt of that. And that's not fair. So I want to be a better, I want to come home better. And that sounds really weird, but I think we even talked about this too, of that transition time of logging out, clocking out, whatever you call it, driving home, whatever it is, that transition from professional to home life and vice versa too. It's a mindset walking in, but it's also a mindset walking out. And Rachel, and someday you will, as looking at parenthood, that becomes even like a gazillion times more important, that you walk in ready to be that role, and everything else goes away. So yeah, to-be list is just literally thinking of, what do I want to be better at? Do I want to be a better listener, better communicator, better spouse, better parent, better reader? I'm so jealous of you, Rachel, of choosing reading as the form of entertainment. And when I can't do something else, I fall back on reading. I used to be that way, and it's kind of fallen off for me. So I want to be a better reader. I want to be somebody that understands why I'm even reading this book. I love the novels. I love the fun books too, and those are great rainy day books, and I love that part of it, but I do want to read more of these types of things, because what I appreciated about this book and about her, Brené Brown, was she practiced what she preached. In other words, the book was filled with her personal stories, her mm-hmm. personal vulnerabilities, her personal mishaps. And that's what she's teaching us to be, that whole person. When you come to work, don't be work Joanne and then mom Joanne. I only know how to be Joanne. My kids know me the same way you know me. And that's the only way I know how to be. And so it was just wonderful to see an author, a leader, a corporate person kind of practice what they preach in this book. And because I'm always going to retain more. We all are, as humans. We're going to retain more if there's personal stories that you can relate to. Kind of that to-do list versus to-be list. To-do lists are facts and tasks and things you can check off. I'm not going to remember that a year from now, what was on my to-do list. But I hope I remember what was on my to-be list. And I think she really practiced what she preaches in this book.
One of the ways that I started thinking about the to-be side of that list is, do I have the tools to get there? Mm-hmm. There's always that, you know, forever old analogy of, if you teach a man to fish, he'll never go hungry. And it's like, you're giving someone the tools to get there. And she talks about it a little bit there towards the end with helicopter parents versus lawnmower parents.
I love that.
The lawnmower parents just pave the path. And so the kids never learn how to deal with adversity, or never know how to deal with, you know, challenges until they get past that path. You know, they weren't given the tools to be, you know, whatever it is that they want to be. You know, they just, it was that next to-do list for them, because it was just that next easy task, versus being given the tools and saying, you know, go learn how to be the best student you want to be, or in my case, the best husband I can be, and someday hopefully the best dad that I can be as well. You know, having those tools is, to me anyways, how you accomplish all of your to-be aspects in life.
I love that.
She actually says towards the end, and I love that what you said, Will, because she says, if we don't have the skills to get back up, we may never risk failing. So I think that is very true as a parent, as, you know, as you're, you know, helping yourself, like, giving yourself the grace to fail. And she says, actually, in the beginning, which is kind of funny, I didn't realize it was a book until I'm just looking at some of my notes right now. But she says, I've never met a brave person who hasn't known disappointment, failure, or even heartbreak. So she kind of bookends like, it's okay to fail. And the best people, and I've probably heard this a million times, but the best leaders and the best people, and if you look at any leader or any entrepreneur, anyone, they've failed a lot. They just gave themselves the grace to fail, to be in touch with their emotions, to know how they're feeling, to accept that, and then get back up. And I grew up riding horses. So one of the rules riding horses was if you fall off the horse, you have to get back on. And I only fell off a couple times, but oh my God, that first time when I was getting back up on that horse, I was like shaking. My whole body was shaking and I was terrified.
And you just wanted to leave, right?
I didn't want to be there anymore. I didn't want to look at that horse. I wanted to walk away. I felt horrible. I had bruises everywhere. Usually I was covered in sawdust because I had fallen and rolled in the dust. But I would get back on, and by the end of the lesson, I was always, the nerves calm down. You realize you can do it. And you come back and you do it again. But that was a really cool teachable moment for me when I was little is, you know, if you fall off, you get back on.
Well, they probably even taught you how to fall, right? How mm-hmm. to fall correctly so that you don't hurt yourself. And to me, that's saying you're going to fall. And that's okay.
And the first time, it doesn't matter if I got taught a million times. It was instincts to kick in, and maybe I did it wrong the first couple of times, but... Yeah, I mean, if you fall off, you get back on, and that's what makes a good leader. And I think, you know, overall, the book is just something that spoke to me. So I'm so glad that you all came along on the journey and making sure that, you know, we're all on the same page and getting a chance to actually enjoy the pleasure of hearing from, like you said, Joanna, a person who lives their values. Yeah. And who is open to sharing everything. So I don't know. This was just a book, and I've read a lot of business books, but it was one that I wanted to make sure that we shared as a company, as a team, and now on this podcast. So it's even better. So I just appreciate everyone getting a chance to spend time, because I always get so much more out of book club when you get to share
right
information from other people and actually get to dive in, and sometimes you interpret things different. So getting a chance to actually share with others is so fun. So thank you.
Oh, true, Rachel. There's a book. There's another book that I was reading the other night, and I was like, oh, I can't wait to tell Rachel and Will about it. I wonder what they would think about this. We might have started something here with just the three of us in this little club. But yeah, I appreciate you, Rachel, very much bringing this. I've never highlighted a book so much in reading this leadership or business books or how to be a better whatever book. Everything was just like, it's so true. That's so true. So to me, that's just a good sign that we're on the right path, and I appreciate you guys. Appreciate you, Rachel, setting this up and picking the book, and Will, it's been an awesome opportunity to hear your insight and have your words of wisdom throughout this too.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having us.
Awesome. Yeah. All right.
Appreciate it.
Everybody have a great day.